Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of myself and everyone here at the Silver Emulsion Podcast, Merry Christmas. I know that snow's coming down pretty hard outside, so I'm glad you made it. I know you didn't have to come, and if it were me, I'd have stayed home. But you didn't, and I appreciate that. We all do. And now, if you'll excuse me, before I start the show, I'd like to kick off my shoes and let out the funk a little bit. 'Cause my dogs, they're barking tonight. Everybody, welcome. This is episode number 13 of the Silver Emulsion Podcast, and my name is Will Kauf, and I am your host. And so let's get this thing started. What am I going to talk about today? I have a few movies to talk about, and as it's been for the last few episodes, I don't have a clear feature or anything like that. So I'm just going to pick one of these three that I can probably talk the most about. So I'm going to go with the Japanese movie from 1967 called The X from Outer Space. So that's going to be the feature, and then later on I'll be briefly, hopefully, talking about a couple more movies. So usually right at this point I do the feedback, but I don't have any feedback, so I'm just gonna roll solo. If my mood seems a bit subdued, it is. I hurt my knee pretty fucking bad. Like, I don't know what happened, but it's hard to bend my leg at all. So anyway, I'm in a lot of pain, and if I forget about it and I move my leg the wrong way, it hurts, and so you might hear a couple of something like that. And so let's get down to it. Okay, so The X from Outer Space. The movie is directed by a guy, Jesus, I should have tried to say this before I just fucking pulled it up, like, okay, here we go, fucking Silver Emulsion for steak. Kazui Nihonmatsu. Nihonmatsu. I'm going to say Nihonmatsu. Okay, so Kazui Nihonmatsu. Yeah, I don't know. Who cares? I'd care. I would like to get it right. But anyway, for the purposes of the podcast, that will do. And so this movie is one of four movies that are a part of the Criterion Collection Eclipse series box set. When Horror Came to Shochiku. Is that what it's called? Shochiku? I don't think so. That sounds wrong. Jesus. It is Shochiku. Hey, I fucking got it right. All right. So this is a clip series. So if you don't know, a clip series is not a full-on Criterion release. It's they're like little series of box sets that are primarily without extras or any kind of special treatment, really, but they just group interesting films. Basically, that they either can't get extras for, or they don't want to bother. Like, they're not going to sell enough to warrant all of that extra cost. So they throw a few like-minded movies together on a box set and put it out, and hopefully people buy it. So in this case, it's a series, not a series, but a collection of four films that were produced by the Japanese company Shochiku. And Shochiku was one of the biggest studios in Japan. And do they still exist? I don't know. Looks like they do. Yeah, I would say so. Looks like they do. Yeah, so they still exist. They were founded in 1895. Holy shit. 121 years ago in Tokyo as a kabuki production company. And then they moved into film production, and they also produce anime films. And there's films of Yasujirō Ozu, Kenju Mizoguchi. They also produced movies from Takashi Miike, Takeshi Kitano, Akira Kurosawa, and Taiwanese director Hao Sao Sen. I haven't seen any of his movies, but I am aware of him. He made the movie last year, maybe last year, I think, called The Assassin, and it's sort of like a art film wuxia. So I am interested in that, but I haven't seen it. It's on Netflix, but you know, other things pull me their way. So anyway, this studio was known more for, like, I think at the time that these movies were made in the mid 60s, they were more like melodramas and just more traditional film genres. And they attempted to start horror film productions, and they made four movies. And those are the four movies that are represented in the box set. So, the first one that they made was a movie called The X from Outer Space. And is it a horror movie? No, it's not. Not really in any way. Unless you classify the classic sort of 50s creature feature, monster movies, kaiju movies like Godzilla, stuff like that. If you consider those horror movies, then you could also consider The X from Outer Space a horror movie. For me, it's more like a sci-fi thing, sci-fi kaiju movie. But the one thing, because the whole time I was thinking, like, is this a horror movie? You know, because there's a couple of scenes where it gets a little tense, and there is, it feels like they might go into a more traditional horror formula or whatever, but they don't. But anyway, the whole time I was trying to think, you know, the Criterion named this box set When Horror Came to Shochiku. And these are the four movies. So this is a sci-fi movie. Why is it considered horror under this title? So I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And the one thing that really stuck out to me, well, actually two things. The movie goes into space, because the X is from outer space. And actually, he's not called the X or anything like that in the movie. He actually has a name. Well, they don't know what it is. It starts out as a UFO, and then eventually, when it goes kaiju, the monster is called Gyulala. And I don't know I don't remember how they came up with that name, or if they must have, somebody must have thought it up, because it's like nobody knew what this thing was, so they just named it Gulala for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it has some significance in Japanese. But it's not translated. Like, you can hear in the Japanese dialogue they're going gulala, gulala. Anyway, so the first thing that I was thinking about, under the guise of is this a horror movie, was how they go into space, and this is 67, so it was right in that era of all the countries are going to space and building space programs and things like that. So there had been space missions at that point already, but space was still a very unknown sort of thing and very mysterious. And we maybe knew enough about it to know that we didn't know hardly anything. And the unknown is a common theme in horror movies. So, what is more unknown than the vast unknown of the universe? So that's pretty scary when you think about it. It's like Woody Allen in when they flash back to his childhood in at the beginning of Annie Hall, and he's just a fucking little kid seeing the therapist talking about how the universe is expanding. I love that fucking movie. Anyway, so that was the one thing. And then the second thing that I thought of is later in the movie when Gulala has manifested as a giant monster and is smashing through the miniature city version of Tokyo. I think it was Tokyo. I don't know. I don't know if it was Tokyo, actually. Why am I saying this is Tokyo? I don't know. I'm just making shit up at this point. But anyway, he's smashing around the miniature town, and which is, you know, there's, I don't know what is there not to like about a guy in a suit smashing a fucking wonderful, beautiful miniature. It's like it reminds me of the Buddhist monks who build the, not build, but they create the sand mandalas with the colored sand, and they create these huge elaborate mandalas, and they're the most beautiful thing you've ever seen, and they take hours and hours to make, and then when they're done with it, they destroy it. And the models of Japanese films remind me of that. Because these models are fucking great. They're amazingly, you know, detailed, and they have little lights in all the buildings, and there's little, like, miniature cars that are driving on the roads and shit, and, like, you know, it feels like a real city. It pretty much always looks like a miniature set in a soundstage with a guy in a suit smashing around it, but they're so charming, and I've always liked just the idea of miniatures and all that stuff. But anyway, so this fucking Gulala is smashing the city, and while he's smashing the city, I thought, and this is a common thing that I've been thinking about a lot of movies, or specifically horror movies, but it can apply to a lot of other stuff too. When I saw him smashing up the city, I thought, what the fuck would I do if I was in that city? Like, the amount of destruction that this guy is causing is immense. And say I'm not in a building that's getting smashed. Like maybe I'm in a building next door and I see him smash through the one there and I'm like, "Oh shit. What am I gonna do?" I mean, can you imagine if that shit was really happening? Like, what the fuck would you do? And that's fucking scary. That's like legitimately scary. What if this fucking gigantic monster, like right now, what if I looked up and a fucking gigantic kaiju monster ripped the goddamn ceiling off of this place? And now I'm looking up and there's a gigantic fucking monster with a big mouth and drools fucking dropping on me and shit. What the fuck am I gonna do? I'm gonna be scared shitless. Is what I'm going to be doing. And so there's a detachment from that in the movie because it's a guy in a suit smashing a miniature town, and we're never not aware of that. We're always clued into that because of the age of the movie. But I always think that it's important to kind of look beyond what we see. Like as modern viewers, specifically when watching older movies, like as a modern viewer, I'm sure the seams are more apparent to me now in 2016 than somebody who, like a kid who was going to see it in 67, or even an adult in 67. I mean, 'cause just the standards and everything were different. So I always try to put myself more in a mindset of like how a person of the day might see that. And that's a big reason why, like in my Shaw Brothers series, I'm watching all of the movies chronologically because I wanted to learn to appreciate the older movies as much as I appreciate the later movies, and the later movies are of a quality high enough to where I could just watch those and appreciate them in the same way that I appreciate Hong Kong movies from the 80s and 90s and late 70s and stuff like that. And I there's not like a barrier there because the level of quality is high enough, but the stuff earlier than that is kind of hit or miss. But my idea was that if I watch nothing but those, then just by default, I would become more entrenched in what was current at the time, and I would have a kind of an idea of like, oh, this is definitely a great movie because the 12 other movies that came out this year were like you couldn't even get any entertainment out of them or whatever, something like that. I mean, it's just a weird example, but anyway. So, I was watching this fucking kaiju movie and I was getting scared because I was literally trying to think of what I would do. We had a big giant ice storm up here that we had one a couple years ago. That was the first one that I went through. But this one, to me, here at my house, it seemed like it wasn't as bad. But at the same time, there were a lot of trees that came down around the house. So, and that didn't happen before, so I guess it was worse. But the other one was like multiple days and stuff. Anyway, trees around the town like took out power for 20,000 people, and people are still without power. And this shit was Thursday was when all the power started going out, and so anyway, people are without power now. It's Saturday, and then like a lot of those people might not get their power back until sometime in the middle of next week. And we only lost power here for, I don't know, maybe 12 hours from one evening to like the early morning or something like that. But anyway, my first fucking thought when the power went out, The first thing I thought of was, what if the power never comes back on? What the fuck am I gonna do? And I started getting all scared and like fearful, like, oh God, what the fuck would I do? I'd be so fucked up. Like, am I prepared for that? I don't think so. So anyway, I enjoy thinking stuff like that in an effort to kind of be scared. I don't know. I can't really explain it. I just it's fun. It's fun to be scared. And horror movies generally don't scare me. Like, I don't really watch horror movies to be scared. I more watch them because I enjoy them and they're fun. But it's it's nice to be scared as well. Anyway, a couple of other things that I wanted to say about this movie. Pieces before it, where the DVD has the original language and the English dubbed. X from Outer Space also has the same thing. And I found myself switching back and forth as I like to do. And I happened to switch it at a very at a nice point because it allowed me this little nugget. So they're talking about like how are they gonna stop Gyulala? And it's a Japanese guy and an American guy. And they're talking to each other. And in the Japanese with subtitles, the subtitles say something about how, like, well, we might need a nuclear bomb to be strong enough to kill Gyulala. But I'm not sure how quickly or excited the Americans will be about dropping another atomic bomb on Japan. But in the English dub, like, he doesn't. The whole fucking sentence and everything has changed. They don't talk about the atomic bomb at all. They don't even talk about America helping out or anything. It was j they just talk about something about do we have enough power? Is it possible to harness the power? Some shit like that. I don't remember. To be honest, I don't remember the specific line, but it's something like that. You heard it here for first. But anyway, this very different approach to a singular moment in the film, it makes you consider something about how Japanese and American people dealt with the atomic bomb, and this was over 20 years after it had been dropped, and in the Japanese version, they mention it, it's fine, it's not like a big moment for the Japanese character to like break down because his family died or anything. I mean, it's nothing, it's just he just throws it out there like, hey, we might need this, but I don't know if we can convince America to do it if we do need that, stuff like that. And the American guy speaking English doesn't even, there's no mention of that at all. And so it seemed like where the Japanese people have always been like forced to contend with the reality of the atomic bomb and like what it has done and what it did to their cities, because they dealt with the destruction they did lose people from it. You know, like families were fucking shattered. So they had to deal with it. They couldn't just sweep it under the rug. But the American release just completely rewrites the line so that that sort of thing is not brought up to Americans. And it seemed very classically American to have this mention of this war atrocity edited out of their popcorn entertainment fucking kaiju sci-fi movie, whereas in the Japanese could handle it. They take it, they mention the A-bomb, and it's like, yeah, okay, I don't know. But would Americans want to deal with that? I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if you could get that in a mainstream American movie now. You know? Anyway. The other thing that's very interesting about this movie is that alongside the story of Eulala, there's also a story of a little love triangle between a Japanese man, a like European woman, I don't remember where she, I think she's like German or something like that, and a Japanese woman. And the two women both love the same man, and so they have a kind of a classic love triangle dynamic. The movie doesn't really, like, it's not a romance movie, so they don't go too hard into it. I mean, you know, it's counterpointed with the fucking monster smashing a town, so it doesn't get too heavy. But what's interesting is that, like, and I don't want to spoil, but like the end, like the takeaway message of the movie is that basically, like, Japanese should stay with Japanese people regardless of anything. Like that should be their that should be the only option. And they apply it to Gulala as well, being like he's a being from outer space and he should stay in outer space, sort of a thing. So, some interesting thoughts from the X from Outer Space. And another thought that I had is that if fucking Criterion can put this movie out, because this movie is not great. It's well made and it has some good effects, and of course the miniature effects are fucking dope. But it's no fucking masterpiece, and it's no like genre fucking gem. You know, it's not like the best kaiju movie ever or anything like that. It's just a fucking sci-fi movie. Like a really good one that they could put out that would be kind of like a rediscovery, like a big find, and they should put it out, is a movie called The Magic Serpent. It's 1966. It's a, you know, the year before that, and it was directed by a guy called Tetsuya Yamauchi. And he also made some movies for Shaw Brothers, and that's how I, well, not no, I came across Magic Serpent because supposedly it influenced George Lucas when he was making Star Wars, the original Star Wars, and so I watched it for that. But I also watched it because Yamauchi made a couple of movies for the Shaw Brothers. They regularly hired directors outside of Hong Kong and China. To direct movies. There's a lot of Korean directors and Japanese directors that did at least one or two movies at Shaw Brothers at some point in the 60s or 70s. Anyway, so Magic Serpent is a fucking masterpiece. It's a great movie. It's fucking FX driven, just one of the funnest fucking movies of that style, where it's just like balls out Japanese fucking movie. And it's old, so it's not like Takashi Miike or anything too crazy, but it's super fun and it's kind of hard to find at this point. And anyway, it's a great movie. X from Outer Space, not so much. And so my point is if they can put out this fucking movie, and I know it's Eclipse and I know it's part of a box set or whatever, but if they can put out this movie, there is no fucking reason why they can't make a case to put out virtually any genre movie that is well regarded. And specifically, my focus is on Shaw Brothers. There's no way they have any excuse not to put out Shaw Brothers after seeing this fucking movie. And they put this out a number of years ago, so obviously no Shaw Brothers in sight. But anyway, I don't know, I get disgruntled that the Shaw Brothers are thought of as B movies, and they're so much more than that. Anyway, going off track. Off the rails. It'll be another segment. It's called fucking Off the Rails. All right, so that's, I think that's got to be it. Oh no, I have a sound. How could I forget the sound? So I have this little sound file. Let me set it up real quick. This is during the point of the movie where Gulala has manifested as his monster form, and he's ravaging a town or a countryside or whatever. I don't particularly remember. Oh, that reminds me. There's one part where these guys are driving a truck, and they're driving a truck and they're trying to get Gulala's attention because they have some like rocket that they need to shoot him with or something, and I don't remember why, but anyway. So they're driving the truck, and it's very reminiscent of the scene in Jurassic Park, the first Jurassic Park, where they're kind of leading the T-Rex with the Jeep, and Jeff Goldblum is in the back seat, and they show the shot of the mirror objects in the mirror are not as close as they seem or something, whatever the fuck that the mirrors say. Anyway, it's a similar kind of thing like that, where they're trying to lead this giant monster and he's chasing the Jeep, and there's a guy in the back of the Jeep, which is, that's why it really makes me think of Jurassic Park. But anyway, so the scene is composed of three different basic shots. There's a shot of the guys in the truck driving, like on a real location. Then there's a sh the close-up shots of Gulala in the soundstage, and then there's a wide shot on a giant miniature set with Gulala running after this little tiny model, like remote control car or something. And they built a whole set that looks just like the location where they were shooting the real truck. And so it cuts in between all three of these things, and it's fucking like fucking great. It works so well. And again, I'm giving the movie as much credit as I can by not picking it apart and not acting like a modern viewer and trying to watch it as an older viewer. But man, they really, those three elements really cut together really exceptionally well, and really sell the effects, and I love stuff like that. But anyway, so the sound. The sound. Gulala is smashing something, and you will hear him roaring, and then Well, whatever. Just fucking listen to it.
Oh, great. He's coming this way.
I just thought that was funny. So let's move on to the next thing. I've rambled about this fucking movie for too long. Okay, so the next movie I watched is Larry Clark's follow-up to Black Caesar, the movie Hell Up in Harlem. And what year was Hell Up in Harlem? It was 1973. And would this be Larry Clark's third movie? I believe so, but let me check. Oh, well, this is not the... okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Yep. Correct. there's a part in Star Trek 4 where they're on Spock's home planet Vulcan, and he's like taking these fucking tests right at the beginning to like learn, like relearn shit or tests that he has learned the stuff. I don't remember. Anyway, he's doing these fucking tests, and the voice of the computer has always stuck with me, because when he does, like, he gets a question wrong, he gets a question right, the computer goes correct. Anyway, so Larry Cohen, Hell Up in Harlem, also starring Fred Williamson, just like Black Caesar, and he's playing the same character, Tommy Gibbs. And what's interesting, before you even start up Hell Up in Harlem, is that the current version of Black Caesar, the DVD version, ends with a scene that doesn't really set up a sequel. I don't want to get too spoilery, but it ends in a way where you wouldn't necessarily expect a sequel. It kind of it has a tight bow on it, and it's a good story, and that's it. But anyway, I happened upon, when I watched Black Caesar and I was listening to part of the commentary, I happened upon a segment of that where Larry Clark was talking about the ending. And he said that when they played this, the DVD version is his, like, director's version. It's the version he prefers. And they tested that version, and everybody, like, the note cards all said, oh, I wish it had ended, like, at this point, instead of going on for another 2 or 3 minutes. And so when they released the movie, they cut the movie where everybody in the test audience said to cut it. And so that last scene hadn't been seen until the DVD, according to Larry Clark in the commentary. And I am, you know, I would believe him. He's the director. So anyway, the sequel, now Hell Up in Harlem, opens with a version of that same scene that ends Black Caesar in the director's cut. It opens with a version of that scene, but it changes a couple of things around so that it more readily sets up a sequel. And in this case, it's the opening moments of the movie, so it's setting up the movie that you're about to watch. And it works really well. You know, it's... I like the ending of Black Caesar, and so I didn't really want a sequel. But, you know, I want to watch all these Larry Clark movies, so I'm going to watch it anyway, whether I wanted it or not. And it turns out that Hell Up in Harlem is quite a fun movie. It fucking, like, it's almost nonstop fucking action. Nothing but action, man. Like for most of the movie, it's like nothing, literally nothing but action. There's fucking like fist fights and explosions. There's Fred Williamson and his fucking crew are just scuba diving into a fucking gangster's mansion, like his ocean mansion, and like sneaking in, and there's fucking gunfights and dope ass gore. It's just like it's got everything, man. And it's very different than Black Caesar. Black Caesar is like a more respectable sort of drama, like a gangster drama that really has something to say, and it's a it's a real movie. And Hell Up in Harlem is a lot more like the fucking fun action sequel. Which is great because it doesn't retread any of the things that were done in Black Caesar. It totally goes off in its own direction, and it's fucking great. So I loved it. Fred Williamson is just a fucking badass, and he gets to do a shitload of badass stuff in Hell Up in Harlem, and including. After the fucking after they scuba in and take over this mansion, they fucking they torture these Italian dudes by forcing them to eat all this soul food, and they're like listing it off like, oh, fucking you're gonna eat greens and you're gonna eat cornbread and you're gonna eat chitlins. It's just so funny. I love shit like that. Fucking soul food, man. Brings a smile to my face. Also, the music. I should probably talk about the music because I mentioned I have that little story from the Larry Clark. Larry. Have I been saying Larry Clark? I think I have. Oh, fuck. Well, whatever. Larry Cohen. Just, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. It's fucking late. I know he's not Larry Clark, the fucking director of Kids and Bully and stuff like that. I know the difference. Anyway, so Larry Cohen. That's the fucking hybrid. Anyway, so Larry Cohen, in the on the commentary, he mentioned how the music for Black Caesar had been done by James Brown, and the course that led James Brown to not be the music the in charge of the score for Hell Up in Harlem, and how his score had been rejected by the studio, and that score became the James Brown album, The Payback. So, the music in Hell Up in Harlem is fun and it's good. And I enjoy it. It's funk and it's fucking soulful and shit. And you know, I'm not terribly picky about that kind of stuff. I like it all. Not all. I mean, come on. I don't like it all, but I like the good shit. And this was pretty good. But having heard The Payback, and I haven't heard it in a little while, so I've been meaning to listen to it again since I watched the movie. But man, The Payback is some deep. Fucking dope ass music, and I just like I don't know. I wish that could have been the score to this movie. But anyway, that's it. It's a great sequel. I fucking loved it. If you're in the mood for a dope ass action 70s blaxploitation movie, and it's not really. I wouldn't even call it so much a blaxploitation movie, because I feel like a lot of the blaxploitation movies almost like don't have respect for the black people, and a lot of them were made by white filmmakers. But I really feel like, and Larry Cohen's a white dude, but I feel like Black Caesar and Hell Up in Harlem are a little more respectable. Especially Black Caesar, that's like a real movie. It's not even a blaxploitation movie, but I don't know. I feel like these are a little more like a rung above a tradition, like a straight up, like I don't know, fucking, I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't think of shit right now. Okay, and then I got a sound for Hell Up in Harlem. So let me set this up. There's a guy who is supposed to be like trailing this other guy, and this is what he says to him so that he knows like he's gonna be watching him.
I'm gonna follow you all over. When you go to the airport, I'll be your ticket. When you walk down the street, I'll be your shadow. In other words, I'm gonna be all over your ass.
Maybe it's not so funny, but I don't know. I really like it a lot. I'm gonna be all over your ass. All right, and then the last movie that I have here is Pumpkinhead 2. Pumpkinhead 2, I had heard bad things about all the Pumpkinhead sequels, but I had faith that at least Pumpkinhead 2 would be good because Pumpkinhead 2 is kind of like a real movie, whereas the other, I think there's two more sequels, those are both sci-fi movies. So I really have no hope for those, but I'll watch them just because I am enjoying Pumpkinhead. But anyway, Pumpkinhead 2 had a lot of promise, just based on various personnel working on the movie. The movie was directed by Jeff Burr, and Jeff Burr is not a household name when it comes to directors, but I became familiar with his films through the course of my Full Moon series. He directed a bunch of movies for Full Moon, like Puppet Master 4, Puppet Master 5, and then he made a few of the Moonbeam movies, the movies that are more directly aimed at kids. He made one of the best of those, a movie called Phantom Town, about these kids who get kind of stuck in this fucking ghost town with actual ghosts. And then he made other stuff too, and then he also made, well, I mean, I'm like ignoring like his other big movies, such as Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, From a Whisper to a Scream, the horror anthology movie from the 80s, and Stepfather 2. I haven't seen any of those, so I don't have anything to say. But what is probably most interesting to fans of Silver Emulsion, if you've been following along since the beginning, Jeff Burr was the co-director on the wonderful and fucking amazing movie that is very hard to find and needs to have a legitimate wide release so that B movie fans around the world can check it out. But it's a movie called Mil Máscaras versus the Aztec Mummy. It was made in 2007, well after the the Santo movies and all of those had run their course. And this movie was made as kind of an homage to those. And it's a fucking great movie. Super fun. It's low budget, but it's made with such love, and it's so fucking good. Like, I can't even begin to explain how good it is. And our own Uncle Jasper wrote a review of it on the site, so if you ever are looking for a review to read, that would be a good one. And so anyway, so he directed, Jeff Burr directed Pumpkinhead 2. So as soon as I heard that, I was interested just based on what I know of Jeff Burr. and his movies. Then it stars, among other people, Amy Dolenz, who I like quite a bit. She is the star of Witchboard 2, which I talked about not too long ago. And it also features Punky Brewster, Soleil Moon Frye. And funnily enough, and I didn't know this going in, but I was watching the movie, and there's like a woman who plays a coroner in the movie. And as soon as I saw her, I thought, God damn, she looks familiar as fuck. And her voice, wow, she sounds familiar too. Who the fuck is that? So I looked it up, and it turns out that it is fucking Gloria Hendry, who once in the 70s was an actress who primarily starred in blaxploitation movies, including such films as Black Caesar, Hell Up in Harlem, Black Belt Jones, and the James Bond movie Live and Let Die, Across 110th Street, Slaughter's Big Ripoff, etc. She's in a few more movies. But anyway, I really like her in Black Caesar specifically. She's also in Hell Up in Harlem, and she does good in that one, but she's really good in Black Caesar. But anyway, there she is in fucking Pumpkinhead too. Like, and I totally didn't know, and I didn't plan it, but I watched two of her movies right in a row. So that was fun. And then also the first Pumpkinhead was made by Stan Winston, and so the effects were done by Stan Winston and his crew. But the effects on Pumpkinhead 2 were done by K&B Effects. And anytime you see K&B Effects on an 80s or 90s movie, or even today, I mean, they do a lot of good shit. But especially in the heyday of 80s and 90s, I see K&B, I'm gonna watch it. And look specifically for some dope fucking effects. And Pumpkinhead 2 has some of those dope ass effects that I've come to know and love. And the movie was made in 1994, which puts it pretty late in terms of like what I consider like the good years for horror. And I don't know, like I haven't really looked at these early 90s years to truly determine what my boundaries are for the great years. But I wouldn't necessarily think that 94 would be in there. And I'm just saying this like I have no idea what fucking 94, what movies came out in 94. So maybe it's actually a great year. I don't know. But anyway, my point is that it's 94, so traditionally when movies are made like 1980, a lot of those movies feel like 70s movies. 1990, a lot of those movies basically feel like 80s movies, whatever, styles take a long time to change. And so Pumpkinhead 2, 94, a little bit more deeper, you think, well, 90s culture should have solidified enough to where this movie has its specific little 90s feel, and it kind of does, but at the same time, it also has a pretty distinct 80s feel, so it feels like this kind of mix of the two. And so, if you dig both of those feels, which I do, lesser so to the 90s, of course, but I like the early 90s feel specifically, if we're gonna talk 90s, but so it kind of melds those two together into this fun little over-the-top early 90s tale. And it's not a great movie. I mean, there's a lot of plot holes and just dumb shit that happens. But I really fucking enjoyed the shit out of this movie. It's really fun. It's over-the-top in a lot of great ways. It's kind of ballsy. Like they don't follow almost any of the rules
of the original puppet head. I keep wanting to say Puppet Master. Pumpkinhead movie, they don't really follow any of those rules. They kind of just make up their own. Which is sad because I really like what they set up in the first one, and so I can see people not liking this one. But if you don't give a shit, that's kind of the fucking thing that'll set you free. The truth that will set you free is that who gives a shit? But anyway, Pumpkinhead 2 has that feel, and it fits the movie very well. This was also pre-Scream, and it kind of has a like a screamish sort of vibe to the way that the kids are and the way that they interact with each other and stuff like that. Same thing, like I Know What You Did Last Summer, those fucking later 90s horror movies. It's so it kind of has a feel like that. But and then the fucking there's a part where the people the teens are speeding down the road at night and they hit a guy and then they get out of the car and like, oh, what happened? We gotta kill. And it's like basically the same scene that's in I Know What You Did Last Summer. It's fucking nuts. Like, did that movie really rip off Pumpkinhead 2? I think it might have. I don't know. Anyway, so this movie is fucking weird, but it's fun. I mean, it's the kind of movie where the mayor is named Mayor Bubba, and he's played by Bill Clinton's like half brother or something, Roger Clinton, and he's a fucking live wire in this movie. Like, he's such a weirdo. So he's in the movie. Linnea Quigley has a small cameo that basically just consists of a sex scene. And then the Necronomicon from Evil Dead has a little cameo. It's just very, very briefly on the table in there's like a this old like recluse woman, and in her little hut shack thing, it's on the table as she's reaching up to the table. You can see it on the table for a split second, so that's pretty cool. Anyways, it's a fun movie. It's not great, but it's made with a lot of style, and it's very fun. And so just go in with an open mind. And I do have a sound from Pumpkinhead 2 as well that I want to play for you before I move on. And this sound has to do it features Gloria Hendry and the guy who plays the dad, Andrew Robinson, who if you saw his face, you'd be like, oh, that guy. And anyway, they're together and they're finding somebody, and take it away.
Oh, sweet Jesus. It's like she's not even here.
She's not. Whatever she saw scared her so bad, her mind couldn't deal with it. And it shut down. It's one step away from being scared to death.
That shit is just like, it's one step away from being scared to death. It's so funny. It just makes me think of there's this Elvira pinball table. I'm really into pinball, if you didn't know. Anyway, there's this Elvira pinball table called Scared Stiff. And so when she said that, it makes me think of that. And in the game, one of the modes is you have to keep hitting these shots to raise the scared meter. And it's like, oh, hair raising and spine tingling and, fucking bone chilling and shit like that. And anyway, when you get up to the top, it's scared stiff. it's fun. I fucking love pinball. with that, that's gonna be the show. I feel like this was a shitty one, but maybe it'll come together once I shore up all the fucking bullshit. And so, upcoming on the site this week, I have the Jackie Chan movie Gorgeous from 1999. Now, I don't know about you, but I didn't know that Jackie Chan went back to Hong Kong to make movies in between his American movies. When Rush Hour came out, I remember going to see it on the opening weekend, and this movie, Gorgeous, came out in Hong Kong just a few months after Rush Hour came out in America. And my finger was pretty, we were fucking on the pulse of Hong Kong movies at that time, but apparently not close enough, because Jackie Chan put out a movie called Gorgeous, and it's a little romantic comedy slash Jackie Chan action movie, and the fights are really great. The movie overall is just okay. Anyway, I shouldn't be saying that. You should be fucking reading my review. Anyway, so that's coming up. Then Steven has a review of an anime called Patema Inverted. Am I saying that right? No, I've probably inverted a couple of syllables or vowels there. So maybe it's, what did I say? Patema? Patama? Maybe it's Patema. Eh, Patama. I don't know. It's not Italian. That's all I know. And then for the Shaw Brothers movie, I have the second co-production with Hammer Studios, a movie called Shatter, starring, who the fuck is that guy? The guy is Stuart Whitman? Yeah, Stuart Whitman. So starring Stuart Whitman, and also featuring T. Lung and Lily Lee, and featuring a little small cameo by Peter Cushing. It's the second Hammer co-production, as I said. There were supposed to be three. Shatter didn't do so well, so there's only two. So that's coming up. And a little bonus, I have a sound from Shatter, because I'm not going to talk about that on the podcast because I wrote about it. I thought I would play it in this segment of the show and see how that goes.
Well, just for the record, it's not one of my favorite holiday resorts for many reasons, Mr. LeBear. One of them being the watermelon. It gives you the running shits.
Now, don't judge the movie based on this wonderfully hilarious quote. The movie is kind of a piece of shit. A little spoiler warning there. So that's the show. If you have any feedback, send it in to me before the next Saturday so I can include it in a future show. And then if you have any thoughts on the movies or thoughts on anything else that you want to share, please do so by sending in the feedback. So Merry Christmas. I hope you guys all have a good holiday. I will be back on Monday the 26th, full of good cheer, hopefully, or not. We'll see. So anyway, that's the show. Adios.
Making up.